Welcome to Westmeath Talks, a series of conversations discussing what's important in our lives. Our guests include the people who are there to help us and our communities thrive. So listen and enjoy as they share their knowledge with us today. So my guests today are Cian Lynch and Robert McDermott. Cian played and coached internationally for New Zealand. He's been working at the League of Ireland level with Athlone and Kilkenny from under-13s up to seniors with both men and women for a number of years. Cian has also worked for the FAI and both their emerging talent and regional international assessment groups. Cian also holds a UEFA Elite A licensed coaching qualifications as well. Robert has played rugby with Eden Derry, Shannon, Clontarf, Old Beverdale rugby clubs. So you've been around, Robert.
More clubs than Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah. He then got involved in adult and youth coaching, then administration in Eden Derry Rugby Club, which led him then into the Midlands area. He became area rep for the Leinster branch and then became president of the branch for seasons 2015 and 2016. And you're still involved at that branch level. Guys, you're both very welcome. Okay, so today we'll talk about sport in youth mental health and maybe the partnership or relationship that they play. Robert, you and I we've travelled the Midlands a few years ago around the different rugby clubs, given workshops on youth mental health to coaches and to the parents that tend to stand around the sidelines. That sort of tells me that the sport has been open to allowing that subject inside their clubhouse walls. I've been across GA clubs, and Cian, you and I have linked in over the years again with the, you know, playing some types of roles that we can offer support to the soccer community as well. How much of a role do you think sport can play in youth mental health?
It's massively important. Looking at it, I suppose, from a football point of view, they were quite late to the party. If I look at the rugby and sort of how proactive rugby and the GA were, I think the football was a little bit slow in coming to the party. And I suppose if we look at it from a local level, it's really only sort of kick-started in the last couple of years that there's been a sort of concerted effort to address the issues there and move things forward. I mean, I would always subscribe to the notion of sort of, you know, healthy body, healthy mind. And I think that's at all age groups, really. If we can get them in young and early, starting early there, and they're kind of just cracking away with it without actually realising what they're working towards. But I think absolutely critical.
That relationship, Robert, you and I developed a few years ago around youth mental health. When it comes to clubs then playing a role in supporting youth mental health, what type of role do you think they can play in help protecting youth mental health?
Yeah, it was 2014, and it was around this time of the year. We went around six of the clubs in the Midlands area, and I think we actually got about 350 people, if memory serves you right, to attend the workshops. Well, what you have there, we had parents, and we coaches, and we had youth players, both boys and girls. It was a comfortable setting, and I think people felt comfortable in it. So I think that is where it wasn't like a school setting, maybe, or it wasn't... very strict. They felt relaxed. It was their own club and they could relax or sit beside their mates. They're in their tracksuit or their club top. I think that helped everybody relax, and I actually think that really helped people just open up and listen as well. And listening is probably as important as opening up and asking questions.
I was often concerned that even though, like say, the workshops were youth mental health awareness, and then obviously leading to that safe talk, which is suicide alertness, I was often sometimes concerned that I was encouraging coaches to take on a responsibility maybe that A, they weren't ready for, or maybe didn't want, maybe didn't feel that they had a role in that. I often sometimes worried that it was maybe knocking on the doors of clubs, asking them to do something that was beyond maybe what they seen themselves playing a role in.
Probably that would be the initial response when you try to broach the subject, but I think you pitched it at the right level. Most people would like to be able to cope with something if it's thrown at them, but probably don't have the confidence to actually deal with it.
Yeah.
But you gave them the basic skills and the directions of where to go with any questions that were raised. And I think that was good, because it wasn't too deep. It was soft and got people in. And if anybody wanted to go further, you had the safe talk programs. But everybody got something out of it. And a lot of people said it to me afterwards. It was just, wow, that was useful. I feel a lot more confident if it was somebody approached me about a situation now.
What type of issues, Cian, in your experience, are young people presenting with, or not even presenting with, what type of issues are coming up in clubs regarding youth mental health?
It's a really difficult one to pinpoint that, to be exact. I mean, I suppose what kind of moved me towards investigating more was I had a young girl, probably about 5 or 6 years ago now, who was a really, really bubbly young character. And then we hadn't seen her for, I think the season broke down, and then she came back in. And just the transformation in her was, it was startling how she was bubbly and then she'd just completely gone reversed into herself. So we kind of pulled the coaches aside and said, look, what's going on here, guys? Are you noticing what I'm noticing? And they said, yeah, we are. So we dug a little bit deeper, and then we took it to, you know, the guys above us, and then we ended up chatting to the parents, and it transpired that the parents had separated over that period of time. So it was kind of, it was a bit of an eye-opener for us in terms of, okay, so we actually have more of a responsibility than we actually think we have with these kids. You know, we're kind of, surrogate parents might be too strong a word, but not far off it, to be honest. So we need to keep an eye on these things here. And that was one of the sort of really sort of eye-opening moments for me in terms of there. And it kind of made me acutely aware of those sort of things that were going on. And then I actually started looking and dealing with my players at all age groups and all levels, even up to senior players, a lot differently. And I started to take a more sort of vested interest in them as people as well, just as opposed to players. So, you know, the issues that sports people experience at all levels are the same as everyone else experiences in their life. They might be magnified, or the players themselves might be under the microscope a little bit more than everyone else would. But I think, you know, the issues are the same. Professional players are in the light there. You know, they're out in the public, so that's, you know, they're under the microscope a lot more. But I think, you know, the issues are the same.
My kids play quite a bit of team sports, so they'll play a bit of rugby, they'll play a bit of Gaelic football. I'm mindful of when we're bringing them, say, to training. Coaches are busy. They're setting up the drills. They're putting down the cones. They're organising what the drills are going to be for the hour. And I'm very mindful now that they only really have an hour with kids. Is it hard, do you think, for a coach to notice maybe a young person struggling, a young person maybe, that there's a change in behaviour?
Probably is, especially if the coach doesn't have any help.
Okay.
You know, and that's where... You need, if you had a couple of guys, it'd be ideal if you had three per team. I think definitely in rugby it helps. And just gives you that couple of minutes maybe to stand back and observe. And observing can be often a key to a lot of things. Just, you could have a kid the back of the group, the coach is talking, and all the while he's building up his confidence to trust him. And someday he's going to say something to him. And you're just trying to get the skill for the coach how to respond. But that was... I think that's still there. Kids are watching and learning and watching the adults. So if it's, I know it'd be great if you could get a couple of guys on each team. It just gives the coaches a little bit of time to both to step back or even bounce an idea or an observation off another coach.
Can coaches cause problems, or even the pressure coaches put us under, can that cause problems for young people?
Yeah, I think they can, but I'd like to follow up there on just at the last point there. I think from my own point of view, one thing I did learn, I suppose, just to follow on from both our points, and Robert's point and my own, is I make a point now with when I'm going into sessions, I put time away at the start and at the finish. So when the players come into me, I will go around. When they come into me, I'll make sure they come and shake my hand, and I ask them how the day was, what was going on, and I always do that with my group. So just so I can get an overview of what's going on, what sort of vibe they're at, and I'll do the same at the end just to make sure they give me a little bit different in the minute, but I give them high fives on the way out. We've got that sort of constant sort of dialogue, so I'm checking in, and then obviously, but I think the observation is absolutely critical, and if you've got that extra set of eyes, especially when you're seeing these kids on a regular basis. But I think, you know, if we can educate the coaches in terms of structurally what the session should look like, in terms of the objectives, the other sort of holistic approach to things as well, I think is really, really important.
Can the sport contribute to difficulties for young people? Can coaches put pressure or performance pressure on young people, maybe when they're at an age where they're not ready to perform, or
absolutely.
They can't handle the performance?
You see it all the time. And I think from my point of view, or my own opinion, I just think it's an education thing for the coaches. And I think, you know, that can sometimes go back to the parents having unrealistic expectations about what they're, you know, they think their child's going to be playing for Manchester United as a 9-year-old. So they just need to relax a little bit, enjoy it. End of the day, it's fun. We're all there to have fun, you know. If the kid's good enough, the kid's going to be good enough, and he'll be playing professional football regardless of what happens. He'll be strong enough. But I think my sort of take on that is the only thing coaches can do really is they can they can coach kids out of love of their sport as opposed to the other way around. So I think, you know, the onus is on coaches just to make sure their kids have fun, they're with their friends, and they're learning all the really positive things that team sport can teach kids. I think it's criminal, really, if we're looking to win leagues or win games as 9, 10, even up to 12, 13-year-olds, really, to be honest. Let them learn the game, let them have fun, let them play with their pals, and that's the only thing that really matters. The rest of it will sort itself out.
You played at an international level for your country.
Yeah.
Okay, so was that noticed at 6, 7, 8, 9?
Yes and no. My father actually played, he was a rugby league man, so he started me off playing rugby league, and I probably shouldn't tell that story, but I was, there was a game going on, I might have been about 5 or 6, so the game was going down one end of the field, I was down the other end of the field picking flowers, so my father said, this is not the game for you, you laddie, so he took me out, he took me out there straight away, so that was the end of that. So, but I'd always liked football, to be honest. I'd always loved it. I had friends around the neighbourhood that played it, and I kind of grew up, it was kind of, we were outside until the lights came on and then we're inside, but it was always sport. All we did around our whole street was sport. We played cricket or rugby or touch rugby or soccer. So all my friends are all, or are out the bike. So we live by the bush, they're in the bush. So we're really active kids, but sport was a huge, huge part of our growing up, really, to be honest. And I think that's one huge difference from, I see from when I grew up to the kids that I'm sort of watching now, or the guys that I teach. You know, they don't take that approach, and some of them do, but I don't think it's, you know, you've got other things that are sort of taken over, you know, the social media, and you've got PlayStations and all that sort of stuff, and I think those are what, you know, our outside activities were back then. But yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one there.
I'm curious to know, Robert, from your perspective, like, and I'm not saying this is this could be across any sport, coaches shouting at kids, or coaches, you know, giving out to kids if they make mistakes, is that helpful in your view, or is that unhelpful from a youth mental health perspective?
I would say it's unhelpful. But if I could just revert back there to it, I seem to be picking up what Kane says. In rugby, there's no competition up to 12. The results of the game is never recorded. And you just go out and play. Whoever wins or loses, there's no record of it. And I think that is very helpful. It allows kids to develop, and it takes the pressure, whatever a coach may feel, of winning, that he feels he has or she feels they have to win a game. But when you're done with games that recorded, it takes that pressure out of the equation a bit.
But what about that sort of natural competitive age that we have?
Kids will be competitive, and
the coaches can be competitive.
But it doesn't mean anything to next week's game.
Okay.
So it's just a game within itself and move on to next week. And I think that helps kids develop. It takes the pressure off them and takes a lot of the pressure off the expecting parent as well. Just let the kids enjoy and run with the ball.
Can rugby stars be noticed at 8, 9, 10, at that type of level, under 11?
Yeah, so it's always a standout kid because he's probably bigger than everybody else, and he can maybe run through everybody at that age. But kids start catching up. And around 15... you can start spotting a rugby player, and a lot of them really mightn't even develop to 18. And I know Leinster have brought in, they started a pathway at 15, and they used to kind of leave it off at 17 if you hadn't made it. But now they brought in another level at 18, because there is late developers, especially if you're going to the forwards. You might just take a spurt of growth in your last couple of years, get your man strength, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And as opposed to Kane's game, I think at 15 you're either spotted or not spotted at that stage.
I think just interesting to listen to that. I find that, I mean, I played with players who went on to have really good, successful professional careers who weren't really pulling up any trees in terms of the whole way up, but what they did have, they had a fantastic attitude and they were mentally strong as individuals, and I think that just saw them through. I think, look, we all know kids who are, you know, the next George Best or the next Pele or whatever when they were kids growing up, and then they've stopped playing by the time they're 13 or 14 because they just don't have it in them, really. Where kids who are just consistent and they're just developing, and then when, you know, they really kick on, is that mental sort of strength really shines through. And I think that's the players that really push on, that are prepared to sacrifice and prepared to have the mental strength to really make it. And I think that's the big, big difference between, you know, good players and elite players, is that mental strength. Because, you know, even with rugby, there's big guys there all over the place, but do they have that mental strength and are prepared to sacrifice and prepared to invest the time and learn in the game to develop and get to that level? So for me, that the mental side of it is, I think that's 80% of it, to be honest. It really is.
How then, like, can parents teach that to young people? Can coaches teach that? Can a 12-year-old or 14-year-old kid teach that to themselves?
I don't know. I would say probably no, to be honest. And it's probably not what you want to hear. I think you have it or you don't have it, really. I mean, I think it's in you. You know, you can teach certain aspects of it, but I think you either have that mindset or you don't have that mindset. I see it with players that are great, but you just see their attitude is not there and they're messing around. You think, that's just not really the way you want to be going with that. And they're talking up a fantastic game. You think, I don't think so. Do you know? So I think it's in you. You're born with that. I think you have it in there. Now, obviously, you need someone to spot that, to foster that, and to develop that as you go, because you're not going to have that from the start. But if you can see, like, I will always, if I'm selecting sides there, I'll always go with a kid that is well-behaved, has good manners, asks questions, is, you know, and is there as punctual, does all the things you know, turns up with clean kit, as opposed to someone who's a great player but really, really bad attitude. I would go with the former every time, because I think that's the raw ingredients that's going to make...
Yeah, the bad attitude can run through the team and destroy.
I've been around it long enough to see now how destructive an influence that can be, but there's very, very few, you know, success cases that come from that. If I'm going to invest time and energy in something, I'll be investing it in someone that I think is the right attitude to crack on with it. And I think the mental component of that is 80% of that, to be honest.
I often wonder, Robert, when, you know, kids go through their 10 years, they might drop sports or they might have different interests, or, you know, developed a different interest. But the kids that drop it, maybe because they weren't getting picked for the team, or they weren't, you know, they aren't the one carrying the ball across the try line every Sunday. And maybe parents like myself are saying, you know, maybe this sport's not for you. Because I sometimes wonder about certain sports with my boys, say, maybe this is not right for you. You know, but like, maybe my lads are quite young, you know, they're still only 9 and 11. So I often wonder, do parents or do young people pull away from sports or different types of sports because they aren't hitting those try lines repetitively every week?
The try line, I don't think, would be as important as not getting game time. If you're being left on the sideline week in, week out, that would make you walk away. Not scoring a try, I don't think that would, but definitely not getting game time would be a meaningful game time, not just the last couple of minutes of the game when you're winning 10-0 or whatever, but meaningful time. That would make you consider walking away, I think.
Do you think that's harmful then for kids, that they aren't getting meaningful game time?
Yeah, that's tough on kids. And it's tough on coaches then to get the balance between winning a game and giving everybody game time. That is the real trick of coaching kids.
Is there a secret to that, to try and get that balance right?
I think that you just need to manage everyone's expectations. I mean, I would bring my parents in at the start of the year, regardless of, you know, if it's a bit higher up, you won't be dealing with parents, you'll just be dealing with players. But if it's a younger group, say my two daughters are 12 and 9, so I would work with their groups. Just bring the parents in the start, say, look, this is the objective of the year. And it could vary depending on the club, whatever it's going to be. Like, objective this year is we're an elite side, we're looking to win games. Or, okay, we're a development group here, we're looking to get everyone playing all the time as much as we can, everyone's going to get an even amount of time. And I think if you say, look, this is where we're going to go, then the parents can make their decisions and the kids can make their decisions based on that information. But I think if kids, just to follow up Robert's point there, I think it can be incredibly destructive for kids just to sit on the side, and very, very demoralising. And it really does eat at their confidence, I think. And that can be easily voided. But I think, you know, as we've kind of touched on before, it's an education thing for the clubs and for the coaches as well to say, and you need to manage people's expectations. I think that's really, really important to tell them exactly what's going on, so everybody knows there's no grey area. This is the policy of the club. That's what we're going to go with it there. But look, I would, all the clubs that I would work with, unless they're an elite level there, it's just really developing players and making sure they have fun. You know, you want them to be in love with the game, and when they leave the game, to come back to the game because they love it so much. They had such great experiences as kids. They want their kids, or, you know, they whoever they're going to be involved with, to have the same feelings they had and, you know, have the same experiences. So
is there a difference with dropout with young people between across the genders? Like, is girls more likely, in your view, to drop out than young lads? And why is that? Or even, not even why is it, how can you stop it or how can you help prevent it?
At the moment, women's rugby and girls' rugby is in its infancy.
It seems to be flourishing there, to be honest.
It is thriving at the moment. So it's hard to talk about dropout at the moment because it seems it's getting bigger and bigger. My own club now, we have 18s, 16s and 14s feeling. Like 4 years ago, we'd only had an adult team.
Okay.
So it's thriving there at that level. Guys, it's multiple of the reasons why people drop out. When you're 12, 13, just maybe it's coming out of national school, you have loads of time, you don't have the pressure of exams, you're trying all sports. Normally when you come into your inter-cert, parents would say you can play one sport. And I think that is often the first reason for dropout. And then when you come to leaving cert, if you're not probably good or you don't have a good team, you might just drop out as well and concentrate on your studies. But if you can actually get over that age group and get the guy to his leaving cert, and if he goes to college and starts playing rugby in college or stays with his club, you probably have him for life then.
And playing sport throughout your school, we know is quite good for your for your performance on exams.
Played in college and you meet people and for life.
I often meet parents though that, you know, they complain that they're, you know, their kids, they did this from the age of 5, and then at 15 or 16, then the opposite, you know, they can't get them off the Xbox or can't get their head out of the phone. And they would have spent a lot of time going around following the games and washing the kits and, you know, washing the gum sheetles.
Yeah.
But now kids are off an age where they just won't do anything. How can parents encourage their kids to keep at sport?
Well, when it comes to, I think, around the 16, 17 year age, you're becoming an adult yourself. So it's the thing you want to do as opposed to your parents bringing you. And especially when you go to college, now you've got to make a decision yourself to get up on your bicycle or get the bus back into training. And a lot of people just fall off at that stage. And Leinster did a little survey there a few years ago on school players and why they dropped out. There was a few things. A lot of school players don't have a connection with a club. They might have only took up rugby when they went to school. So they don't have a route back to the club so they can fall through the cracks. But a lot of them guys said no club never asked them to play. It could be as simple as that. Nobody asked them.
What about for you then, Cian, in the soccer world? How can parents help keep their kids engaged in sport at that 15, 16, 17-year-old stage where they might want to drop out or they might want to get involved in, you know, more social media stuff, for example? When we know sport's good for them, when we know the health benefits and the team benefits and the performance benefits can be good for them.
I don't know if there's much you can do, to be honest. I think, just to follow what Robert said there, I mean, I think they do get to an age where they're independent. They start making those decisions themselves. I think all parents can do really is just maintain that love for the game, stay with it, you know, just keep the interest levels there and just keep them coming along. Or possibly they might not be interested in the playing side of it. Can they move them into some other side of it? Could they do a bit of coaching or possibly some administration or help out around the club, just be part of it? I mean, I think, you know, just being part of the club there is, I mean, I think back to my first soccer club back in New Zealand and it had a fantastic community spirit there. And there was people down there, had a bar there, you know, the parents would love meeting down there. They had barbecues going. It was fantastic. Like, so had a real good community spirit. I think, you know, if you can kind of foster that within a club, I think rugby clubs and GA clubs are a lot better at doing that than soccer clubs are in Ireland, to be honest. But, you know, particularly GA clubs, I find, are really good at that sort of thing. Now, that said, Tullamore Rugby is really good at that as well. They have a lot of things sort of going on there, and, you know, if they've got a good space there, it kind of really gives them the opportunity to really try and bring people into the club and, you know, push that side of it, which I think is really important. So, you know, I think people naturally fall away from it because there's other things that come into, you know, if you're getting of the age where, you know, a trip to the pub or off to see the girlfriend becomes more important than going to have a game of football, then that's it. But I think, you know, if we can keep them somehow interested in it, that they might come back to it or maybe give back to the game in some shape or form in the future. That's kind of all we can do, really. But I think if we can lay that groundwork at the start and make sure that they love the game and they don't, you know, they don't fall out of love with the game, then they'll always, you know, if you were to get a tap on the shoulder and say, would you come down and give me a hand? Then, yeah, I will do, actually, because I had a great time. So I think that's the importance of the early work that's done and ensuring that follows through up until we're adults now. So I mean, I can't say no when someone asks me to do something at a football club. All right, then come on in, let's go. Because I had such good experiences growing up with it. So, and I think that's what I would really like to push on to the kids that I work with and also the parents that I work with as well.
That sense of identity or that sense of belonging is really, really important, I think. You know, whether it be the club hat or the, you know, the jersey or the jacket that we can wear nowadays. I think that sense of identity is really, really important for young people.
Correct, yeah. And just follow up on Kane's point, actually, they also would maintain at your last maybe 2 years of underage rugby, if you can get probably, to, I know it's not always possible, if your best coach in the club could coach that age group, it keeps them interested, very keen that they're getting good quality coaching. And at that age, kids are...
What age would you have them at? 17, 18. See, we would go the other way there. I think the best coaches we would have would be under 10s or under 11s, 9s or 10s. If I was director of coaching at a club, but the best coaches I had at the club, I'd put them in under 10s or under 11s, or under 9s, under 10s. That would be the best coaches I have at the club working with them. Now, it has to be a personality fit there, obviously, for whatever age, but that's interesting.
And I remember doing a coaching course once, and somebody asked at the coaching course, like, to the guy who was giving the course, what is success for a season, which most people think is lifting a cup, but he, fairness to him, said it's actually at the end of the season, can you honestly say your players are better players now than they were back in September? And he says that is success. You've taught them that.
Guys, thank you so much for coming in to chat with us today. Thank you. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Until our next podcast, Slán go Fáil.